drawings of fireworks. Oscar forgot to tell his father about the Cleverer's plans to move away from the alley. Even though their talk had gone much better than the previous night, it still left him feeling strange and empty, hollow and without hope. He just couldn't bear to talk about more sad things when it was over. Instead, he mumbled that he was going to meet Sage, gathered up his homework, and left for Fort Cleverbuckle. Sage was already there, finishing up a math worksheet from the comfort of her green beanbag. Dot was next to her. She'd painted the wheelchair a pale pink sometime last year and stuck glow-in-the-dark stars all over it. Sage had used a wheelchair for almost 9 years now. When she was 3, she'd contracted acute flash-eyed myelitis. The virus had mostly affected her legs, causing numbness, tingling, and eventually a muscle weakness that meant she couldn't put her whole weight on her legs anymore. "Hey," Oscar said as he slipped into the fort. It was still misting outside, and he predicted it would begin roaring within the hour, so they didn't have much time to spend together. "Hey, Oscar!" And at the same time, they pulled something out of their pockets. They both had night market flyers. Sage started laughing. "I was hoping you'd find one, too. There were so many when we walked home from the shop. Was your dad super mad at you?" "Not really. We talked about it. I think he knows Gregory and Tim are bullies." "Good. I'm sorry that happened. But on the bright side, we get to go to the night market." Oscar's stomach fell. "Well, maybe," he said. "What do you mean, maybe?" "My dad says we may not be able to go. Things are kind of tight with money. Actually, there's something I've been meaning to tell you. I just couldn't figure out a good time, but I guess now it is." "Oscar," Sage said, her voice quiet, "what's wrong?" "Money is really tight. My dad says, well, he says I can't do my uppers. I'm going to be an apprentice instead. I'm going to be his apprentice." "At Buckle Umbrellas?" Sage asked, her eyes wide. "You aren't going back to school?" "I guess it doesn't really matter anyway, since you won't even be there." "Oscar, I don't know what to say. Your mom..." His mom and Sage's mom had been best friends. It's why he and Sage had known each other since they were babies. He knew Sage didn't remember his mom any better than he did, but she knew Eleanor had been principal of EBA, and she knew how much she valued education. "Let's talk about something happier," Oscar said to break the awkward silence in the fort. "What was your favorite part of the last night market?" "The fireworks, of course," Sage said. "But to be honest, I don't remember much else." She had been only 5. The fireworks had been larger than life, brilliant explosions of color that she thought of often. Oscar had seen them too from Dove's roof, but they'd been far away, tiny pinpricks of light against the horizon. Sage loved fireworks. The walls of Fort Cleverbuckle were covered in her drawings, and they included many papers filled with brightly colored sky explosions. He looked around at the drawings now and wondered, suddenly, what would Fort Cleverbuckle be when Sage left? Would Oscar still come here? Or would it be too painful to be here without her, too lonely, too sad? Would she take all the drawings with her? Would it just be an empty, depressing space? He loved this fort. He kept looking around at the single light bulb hanging from the ceiling. Janet had helped wire it. At the 2 beanbags, at the small table pushed against one wall, at the rug Sage had rescued from the side of the road, at Sage herself, who'd gone back to her math homework, quickly filling in the answers to questions that would have taken Oscar twice as long to answer. He reached into his pocket and felt the smooth surface of Wib. It made him feel just the tiniest bit better, and then there was a tremendous crack of thunder. "Uh-oh," Sage said. They left Fort Cleverbuckle quickly, wanting to avoid the roar. Back in his bedroom, Oscar watched the light come on in Sage's room. He forced himself to do his homework. Then he sat on his bed and took up a half-finished carving from his nightstand. It was a blue whale. He had been carefully creating the lines on the underside of its enormous mouth, running his whittling knife along the wood to create smooth, shallow grooves. He wasn't supposed to carve in bed because he always got wood flakes and sawdust on his sheets, but he liked having the smell of sweet wood all around him as he fell asleep. It was comforting, familiar, like the smell of the umbrella shop. Outside his window, it roared with a vengeance. The streets would probably be flooded tomorrow, ankle-high water splashing against his legs as he trudged his way to school. He'd have to wear his rain boots, otherwise his sneakers would just end up soaking wet. But he still wouldn't carry an umbrella. More so than ever, he had no desire to do that. The best umbrellas in the entire country. The rest of the week passed by uneventfully, with no major life-changing announcements or fistfights. Oscar was relieved about that. He carefully avoided Gregory and Tim at school, keeping his head down, doing his homework, making sure not to go near the tree they claimed as their own. By Saturday morning, he could open his eye, but it was still brilliantly bruised, an impressive palette of blues and purples and dark yellowy oranges. He went downstairs and made himself toast with flack. A flack is a type of nut known for its creamy, buttery flavor. Butter and jam. Then joined his father at the table. "Are you still good to help at the shop today?" Billy asked. I have to make a trip to the factories to source those parts I need. Yep, no problem, Oscar said. He had a plan to bring all his homework to the store and get it out of the way for the rest of the weekend. And when you stop by the spice store, we're out of salt. Take the canister. Sure thing, Dad. The spice store was called Rainy Season. The owner, an old man named Mr. Bumbleshire, was incredibly proud of that plum, and I don't blame him. And Mrs. Cleverer had worked there since Oscar and Sage were kids. As he headed there now, he wondered if she would be sad about having to leave it. She had always loved spices in cooking and baking so much. But there was probably an even better spice store near Roan Pyres, Oscar thought. Maybe she should get a job there. That made him feel a little grumpy, although he tried to brush off the feeling as he reached Rainy Season and stepped inside its cozy, well-fragranced walls. Mrs. Cleverer was sitting on a stool at the register. Unlike her husband, who had not a drop of warmth about him, Mrs. Cleverer was a cheerful, short, chubby woman who always had a smile on her face and a small sachet of sugar for Oscar. Sugar is a delicacy they rarely have access to in the tow. Oscar, she said, now adjusting Arthur on her lap. Sage's younger brother was almost a year old, and he was currently keeping up a steady stream of baby babble. It's so nice to see you. Mrs. Cleverer's face was smiley and warm as usual, but Oscar thought he also detected a shadow of guilt? Regret? Well, that made sense. Where Mr. Cleverer didn't give a hoot about yanking Sage away from the alley and Oscar was sure that Mrs. Cleverer felt badly about it, which was evidenced by how she immediately set Arthur down on the ground and filled a very large sachet of sugar for Oscar. Shh, she said with a wink, slipping it into his pocket. Then, for good measure, she stuffed a long, skinny paper bag with several cinnamon sticks and gave him those as well. What else do you need, Oscar? She asked. Just some salt, please, Oscar said, handing her the empty canister. Are you excited for the night market? Oh, yeah, totally, Oscar said. He didn't feel like telling Mrs. Clever he might not be able to go. I love the night market, Mrs. Clever continued. Those for Southians bring magic with them. Magic that doesn't exist in Terra anymore. One skiff 40 for the salt. Will Bilius bring some umbrellas to sell? I think so, Oscar said, digging around in his pockets for the money. Well, I hope to see you there. Oscar placed the money on the counter. Me too, and thank you for these. He patted his now full pocket, where the sachet of sugar and bag of cinnamon sticks were safely kept. He'd make sweet cinnamon tea for dessert that night. Bilius would love that. The Buckle Umbrella Shop was chilly and dark when Oscar arrived. He turned the lights on and flipped the closed sign to open and lit a fire in the small furnace, crouching down before it, rubbing his hands together to keep warm. It had been sluicing all morning, and Oscar felt chilled to the bone. Once he could feel his fingers again, he moved to the workbench and spread his homework out on the surface before him. He was an hour or so into an essay on Roan's industrial history when someone pushed into the shop, the bell above the door tinkling cheerfully. "Hi there," Oscar said, looking up to find a person draped in many layers of brown fabrics, with an oversized brown hood pulled over their head, hiding their face. As it was currently freezing cold outside, Oscar didn't find this odd at all. "Welcome to Buckle Umbrellas. Feel free to browse around and let me know if you need help with anything." The person nodded their head as if to say thanks, and Oscar watched as they moved slowly around the room, occasionally touching an umbrella or pulling it out of its barrel to get a closer look. "The umbrella finds the person," Bilius always said, which was incredibly nerdy in Oscar's opinion, which meant that Oscar never had to be a pushy salesman. Bilius much preferred to sit back and let the customer browse on their own time. So that's what Oscar did. He went back to his essay and was engrossed in writing about the factory revolts of 1392 when the customer carefully set something on the desk in front of him. It was the Genel. If you don't remember, a Genel is a type of warm rain that falls from a seemingly cloudless blue sky model. All of Bilius's umbrellas were named after different types of rain, and the Genel had a clear canvas so you could see through it to the lovely blue sky above you, even though Oscar couldn't remember the last time he'd seen a lovely blue sky above him. "Great choice," Oscar said. He made a movement to take the umbrella, but the customer held up one hand in a gesture that clearly meant, "I'm not done yet." Oscar nodded and went back to his essay, leaving the Genel where it was. After a few more minutes, the customer set another umbrella next to the Genel. This one was the Trank Lumpet. A reminder, this is a rain consisting of sudden bursts of heavy downpour, which was one of the stronger umbrellas Bilius made, with reinforced ribs and stretchers. Before Oscar could even move, the customer held up a hand. Still not done. This time, Oscar couldn't quite focus back on his essay. He watched the customer as they moved through the store, taking one umbrella from a stack of wibs, and this was Oscar's favorite type of rain, a gentle sprinkle, one from a barrel of mists, one more from the Genels, and one from a display of blander wheels. These were the most expensive umbrellas Billy has sold. They were virtually indestructible. I know what you're thinking. Blander wheel? Oh, right, I remember that. Hey, when is Oscar going to get trapped in the blander wheel? Is he going to be okay? Should we go back and check on him? Did you forget about him? The answers to these questions are soon, maybe, not yet, no. The customer set these four new umbrellas down on the desk, studied their collection thus far, then nodded at Oscar. There were six umbrellas in front of him. Oscar couldn't move for at least 10 seconds, but then, with shaky hands, he grabbed the receipt book and began to write down the purchases. The customer's face was still hidden by their hood, and they waited patiently as Oscar tallied everything and, in slightly astonished voice, read the total aloud. "That'll be 380 skiffs, please." The customer nodded, pulled a worn leather wallet from the folds of their robes, and counted out a number of bills. They held them out to Oscar, who took the money, his hand still shaking, counted it, it was exact, and slid the bills into the drawer. "Let me wrap these up for you," he said, taking a few sheets of brown paper from another drawer. Once he had wrapped the umbrellas and slipped them into two long paper bags, he held them out to the customer and said, "Thank you so much. We really appreciate your business." "Your father makes the best umbrellas in the entire country," the customer said. "I'm honored to be here. Thank you." And then they left the store, and Oscar did not move for at least a minute. And then he let out a joyful yelp and danced around the shop for the next 5 minutes. They would definitely be able to go to the night market now. Just a couple. Two more customers came to the store before Bilius returned, and Oscar sold one more umbrella, another wib. He added 55 skiffs to the till, bringing the day's total to 435 skiffs. When Bilius returned to the shop that afternoon, tired and a little grumpy from taking the bus all over the tow, Oscar struggled to keep a straight face. "Any sales?" Bilius asked, dumping his parcels on the floor in the back of the shop. "A couple, actually," Oscar replied. "A couple? Nice job, Oscar." "Yeah, no big deal," Oscar said. "Couple of wibs." "One of my most popular," Bilius said, nodding. "Couple of gentles, too." "Really?" "A mist," Oscar continued. Bilius moved toward the workbench, looking at Oscar carefully. "Oscar, how many umbrellas did we sell today?" "Oh, just a couple," Oscar repeated. "Like, you know, seven." "Seven?" Bilius said. "We sold seven umbrellas?" "Including a tranklumpet and a blander wheel." Bilius took one step back, then one step forward, then he put both of his hands on the workbench and stared at Oscar intently. "Oscar? Are you joking?" Oscar took the stack of skiffs from the till and spread the bills out in front of his father, and Bilius had basically the same reaction Oscar had. He stared, he yelped, and he danced. A feast. That night, Bilius spread the skiffs on the kitchen table and divided them into three piles. He slid the largest pile to the side. "This is for bills," he said. The remaining two piles contained 50 skiffs each. He pushed one of these piles toward Oscar. "And this is for the night market," he said. "What, really?" Oscar exclaimed. "So we can go?" "Really? You earned it today, Oscar." Oscar was so excited that he was shaking, and Bilius couldn't stop smiling. They had a feast for dinner, two different kinds of pies and a cookie apiece for dessert. Both of them smiled for about 6 hours straight. They played flock with their bellies full, a mug of sweets and mint tea for each of them. "And what did they look like again?" Bilius asked for the third or fourth time. "Dad, I told you, they had a hood on. I couldn't really see their face." "And brown robes, you said." "Brown robes, yep, lots of layers, kind of cool looking." Bilius made his move, then looked up at Oscar. "I can't say for sure, but I think you might have sold six buckle umbrellas to a Farsouthian." "Really?" Oscar asked. It was the first time Bilius had suggested it, and just the idea alone sent a thrill through Oscar. "It just doesn't sound like anyone from around here," Bilius said, "and the Farsouthians will have started to arrive by now, I think, at least some of them." "Wow," Oscar said, "a Farsouthian. I can't wait to tell Sage." But Sage wasn't around that weekend, he remembered. Her family had gone to Roan Pierce. They were looking at their new house and starting to get acquainted with their neighborhood and buying new furniture and doing all that boring stuff Oscar couldn't care less about. Obviously, he did care about it. He cared about it very, very much. But he thought if he kept pretending he didn't care about it, he might manage to convince himself it was true. "How is Sage anyway? Haven't seen her in a few weeks," Bilius said. Oscar still hadn't told his father that the Cleverers were leaving the alley, and he guessed that now was as good a time as ever. He made his move in flock, crossed his hands on the table, and said, "She's moving." "Oh? Moving where? Cardinal? They just have a lovely remodel, I hear." "Roan Pierce," Oscar mumbled. Bilius looked up, his eyes suddenly narrowed, his mouth tight. "Oh, Oscar, I'm so sorry." Oscar shrugged. "It's okay. It's better for her. It's better there." "Not better, Oscar," Bilius corrected gently. "Just different." "Yeah, well, either way, I'll probably never see her again." "Nonsense," Bilius said. "We can go visit her whenever you'd like. Once a month. It's a nice trip. We should get out of the tome more often anyway. We're a regular pair of homebodies. Oscar didn't mention that they were supposed to leave the tome for his birthday, which was now just 3 weeks away, but he didn't want to make his father feel bad, so he didn't say anything at all. Plus, next week they were going to the night market. He'd take that over Commerce City any day. Last day. Isn't it always the case that when you're absolutely dreading something, time seems to speed up and move much more quickly than it ever has before, so that the thing you're dreading seems to fly toward you with superhuman speed? And similarly, when you are so excited for something that's coming up, time seems to slow down to a painstaking crawl, so that the thing you're excited for seems impossibly far away, like it might never arrive at all? That next week was something of a constant battle between two extremes, because Oscar was both dreading the end of school, because it was end of school for him forever, and because Sage was moving, and desperate to reach Friday night to visit the night market. As a result of these two very different emotions, it seemed that time couldn't figure out what to do with itself. Monday never seemed to never end. Tuesday and Wednesday were gone in a flash. Thursday lasted for at least a year, and Friday happened much too quickly. Before Oscar was really prepared for it, their fourth session teachers had dismissed them all and middles were officially over. The hallways were alive with energy. Every kid in the tow was ecstatic that school was over and summer had started and the night market was just a few hours away. Well, every kid except Oscar. And Sage. Sage had been quiet all week, and more than once Oscar had to say the same thing to her multiple times before she properly heard him. She kept dozing off, getting solemn and somber, then snapping out of it and going almost back to normal. He found her at her locker now, dutifully cleaning it out of all books, paper, pencils, pens, and other detritus that had accumulated over the school year. She was sliding everything carefully into her backpack, except for a very brown and old banana peel which she had dropped on the floor and was fastidiously ignoring. Oscar stood behind Sage just watching. One of the last things she removed from her locker was a photo of the two of them, which had been held to the door of the locker with a small magnet. She took it down and held it to her hand, just looking at it. Then she slipped that, too, into her bag. "Hey," Oscar said, finally making his presence known. "Oh, hey. Want to go to the market with me?" he asked, then clarified. "East Market. Just need to see Nico." "I have to go home," she said, not quite meeting his eye. "You know, the movers will already be there." "Right," Oscar said. "Well, see you tonight?" Oscar had told Paige he was going to the night market, and they'd made a plan to meet in front of the Ferris wheel. A real-life Ferris wheel. Oscar would have never dreamed he'd actually see one. At 10 o'clock that night. "Yeah," Sage said. "Sounds good. Are you..." But he let his voice trail off, because he'd been about to ask her if she was okay, and of course she wasn't okay. "Excited for tonight?" she said, forcing a smile. She shut her locker, looped her bag around the back of her wheelchair, and picked up the banana peel with two fingers. She tossed it in a trash can one of the teachers had said in the middle of the hallway and started for the elevator. It had been a week. Oscar felt exhausted and miserable. But he also felt excited, eager, and really happy about riding a Ferris wheel. It was a lot of emotions for one person to have, and as a result, he felt almost stuffed, a bit swollen and heavy. And when he reached Nico's stall at East Market, Nico noticed immediately, "My small friend, why the long face?" Oscar shrugged. "Last day of school." Nico softened. He knew all about Sage leaving and about Oscar not continuing on to his uppers. Oscar told Nico everything, pretty much, and he listened closely, usually while sharing a midnight orange or slicing an apple in half. "This is a big day, Oscar," Nico said now, patting Oscar heavily on the shoulder. "Feel those feelings." "I don't think I have another option," Oscar replied dryly. "I've tried not to feel them, and they just keep coming." "I know how that goes," Nico said, laughing loudly, a comforting, friendly laugh that made Oscar smile. "Can I get you anything to eat?" "No, that's okay, Nico. My dad just wanted to make sure you can still drive us tonight." "Of course I can. I'd do anything for old Bill," Nico said. Then, winking, he added, "And you. Meet you here at 8? "Perfect. We'll bring you dinner, okay? I'm making a flatbread." Nico clapped his hands together. "You know the way to my heart is through my stomach." "It's the least we can do," Oscar pointed out. Nico was one of the lucky few in the tow to own a truck. Most people would get to the night market by walking. It would probably take them close to 2 hours each way, and a good number of them would carry tents on their backs, sleeping in the open fields to the north of the fairgrounds so they wouldn't have to make the trek twice in one day. Nico's business at the night market was, of course, fruits, but not just any fruits. He only brought the things he wouldn't even sell at Central Market. That's how rare and pricey they were. Nico looked around now, checking to see if anyone was watching, then he slipped his hand underneath a canvas curtain and withdrew a small rock. Stone fruit. In our world, a stone fruit is a fruit, such as a peach or a plum or a cherry, that has sweet, pulpy flesh surrounding a hard, stone-like pit. In Oscar's world, a stone fruit is a very rare fruit that, true to its name, looks and feels exactly like a stone. He whispered, "Careful with it. If anybody sees you with that, just put it in your mouth quick." "I'm not eating a rock," Oscar said, shocked. "Put it in your mouth," Nico hissed back. And if it was anybody else, Oscar would have tossed the stone right over his shoulder. But because it was Nico, he popped it into his mouth, expecting to taste dirt and grit and, well, rock. Because it was a rock. But what? The stone, which for a moment felt and tasted exactly how a stone would feel and taste on your tongue, melted almost instantly, liquefying in Oscar's mouth, pouring over his teeth and tongue and tonsils. It was chocolatey and sweet with just the perfect amount of tartness. Oscar's eyes grew wide. When he swallowed, it was like hot chocolate gliding down his throat. It was the most delicious thing he had ever tasted in his entire life. "I told you," Nico said, smirking. Is that illegal?" Oscar asked. "What do you mean if anybody sees you with that? Is it not allowed? Can I have another one?" "These go for 10 skiffs apiece, Oscar. So as much as I love you, no, you may not have another one," Nico said. Oscar briefly debated whether he should spend his 50 skiffs on 5 more pieces of stone fruit. That was how good it was. But before he had a chance to decide either way, Nico shooed him off. Oscar spent a few more minutes at the market collecting the ingredients for his flatbread, then set off towards Dove.